Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
The House of Mystery, and now we are at the interview part of the show, and today we have a great writer. His name is J.D. Horn. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, how is everything going for you now? Do you, as a writer, has this whole COVID thing sort of put a damper on your writing, or does it affect you?
Well, I have to admit, other than not being able to go to the gym or run without a mask, my life is pretty much the same, because I sit at home in front of my computer typing. So that's, I think a lot of writers feel the same way. It's like, other than the impending sense of doom, everything's exactly the same.
Yeah, but would that put a dark cloud on your writing?
Oh gosh,
when you write a story.
I don't know if that would necessarily put a dark cloud on your writing. But I do think on my writing, but I do think that it challenges you in the stories that you're telling, whether in this post-pandemic world. I'm looking ahead, assuming we're going to survive, whether the stories really still hold value, and so I know some friends who, one friend in particular I'm thinking of who writes near future science fiction, and she has been having a hard time keeping up for years now. And so it's a matter of, looking at what you're writing, looking to see if there are fundamental truths about, either humanity that you want to tell, or just still entertaining aspects of the story you want to tell, and see if they still will play in the world that we have going forward.
Now, in your writing, you're writing, I guess, primarily fiction. So it's called Dark Fantasy, and also the best-selling Witching Savannah series. So how do you get your ideas, and where do you drive that from? Like, where does that come from?
Well, I've got two series. One is set in Savannah, and then another, the second, is set in New Orleans. And I have a standalone, which is called Chivalry, and it is set in a fictional town in Mississippi. I've always been fascinated with the occult, and it just found, the occult found its way into my stories. So in Savannah, it is much more sort of ancient alien influenced, with like kind of interdimensional demons being the bad guys, whereas with the New Orleans series, when I set out to write that, here's a case where a dark shadow did come over my writing. I had promised sort of a light mystery with, paranormal themes into my publisher. And like I like to say, I promised them Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo, and I turned in Night on Bald Mountain. And because life was pretty dark for a while. And so the ideas come from just my general reading, my interest in the occult, and my interest in human beings. I like using magic as a metaphor. I play heavily into family drama. So you could imagine, you could take magic out of some of my stories, and I think they would still stand just as family sort of relationship stories. But when you put the magic in, they're a lot more fun.
As a fiction writer, when you have characters in these stories, do you take them from people you actually know or have met or maybe even live with, and kind of take their personalities and maybe what it is they do in life and incorporate it in your stories?
I actually tend not to do that. Most of my characters are characters who sort of reveal themselves to me. I'm fairly convinced if they ever get my medication adjusted, I will be out of the quarter. But I think that I can think of a few times where I have taken inspiration from outside sources. One is Natalie in the New Orleans series, and I knew a woman many years ago. We weren't close, we weren't friends, but she was like this very tough, strong woman who is the kindest person on the planet. And just the memory of this woman, whose name is Chris, sort of helped me pull together Natalie. But normally, if you make it into one of my books, it's because I don't like you. There's this a United Airlines employee in Savannah, Georgia, who made me so angry that I was willing to miss my flight to talk to his manager. And so I wrote him into a book where I decapitated him and had his head turned into a chandelier. So I felt good about that choice.
Well, at least you didn't do it in real life.
No, I'm not quite that crazy. But it felt good to serve this guy up a little bit of justice in one of my books.
Hey, how do you make a character grow? If it's not based on someone you know, and you're doing a series of books, and you have a character throughout a book, or even a couple of books, how can you grow with that? And how long does that take you to do that process?
It depends on the character. Some characters just spring fully formed, as with G-Lo from the Savannah series. With that book, I had written the first, say, 150 pages six or seven times, and I could not get it past that point. And I swear I heard a voice saying, I know what happens next. If you listen to me, I'll tell you. And she took over. And I'm like, I need to see a therapist, or I need to start typing. So I opted for typing. And she really did. She basically wrote the first two books of that series. And so she sort of sprang fully formed. She just felt like she was there. Other characters you really have to work for. Alice from the New Orleans series. I was trying to write her as a particular type of person, and she was not coming alive, not coming to the page. And 6 weeks before the first draft was due to my publisher, I still didn't have a book. And I thought, I'm going to have to write her out. She was supposed to be the main character, but she was the only one who wasn't working. And I woke up one morning, and suddenly she was there. She told me everything I had wrong about her, that she wasn't the person I was trying to write her as, that her life experiences weren't what I was trying to force on her. And the second I listened to her, boom, she was there. But it was after about 7 months of struggling with that character. It was only when I'm like, either you got to stand up or you're cut. She came through to me. So I don't know. For me, the characters always sort of bring themselves to life. And if they don't, they don't stay in the book. I've had many characters who I intended to have in a story who either they just don't come to life fully, or even if they do have a personality, they don't want to be part of the book. They just don't want to be in it. And I know that they're not they're not meant to be in that story. But then I have a character like Evangeline KC from the New Orleans series, where I was planning on a different book, completely different book, and it was going to be set in Oregon, yada, 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 and Evangeline was going to be a character in that book. But she came with me. When I changed books, she's like, oh, no, I'm packing up and coming with you. So there are some characters who want to live, who want to breathe so desperately, they will come straight in and they will sort of take the story over. Other ones you have to coax along. I guess it's kind of like having children. Some are, you know, sort of more self-managed and others you really got to keep an eye on.
Hi, JD.
Hi.
This is it. We've got loads of questions for me. I have to I'll ask for your apologies now. Right, so where do I start? So you've mentioned your love of the occult and
yes.
of people and that really quite passionate interest that you have, which comes through really clearly. So there's one part of me that's thinking, I really want to know where that comes from. But then the other part came when you were telling me about these characters coming to life as if they have a control over you and your writing and they're guiding and directing you. So the question with that would be, do you think these characters are meant to be, and are they presented to you by something else? So if we go back to the first question of your interest in the occult and your belief and how you became interested, I'd be grateful.
So I tend to think, and many people will think I'm crazy, but I tend to think reality is far more plastic than we are led to believe by our senses. I'm not denying that there is a concrete reality that we have to function in, and I think in that world, science rules. Science tells us how to live our lives safely and to function in a mm-hmm. daily world. They give us cell phones, they give us medicines. Yay. They're the ones who own this sort of realm. But I also think that there's a spiritual realm, and I think that with Ender's Net of Jewels, where everything is sort of just, everything is imaginary on some level. So I think that when you reach out and tap into occult forces, you're actually reaching beyond the bubble we live in, and sometimes energies from beyond can make their way in, and sometimes you can connect with energies that are outside of your bubble. I don't know. I have a firm believer that there is, if there isn't magic in the world, there's magic outside the world. With my New Orleans series, it's a bit of a spoiler, but part of what I have the character come to, Evangeline, she comes to the conclusion that there's absolutely no such thing as magic, but everything is made from magic. And that's kind of my occult view, that in the world we're in, you may not be able to access magic in the sense, you know, like Harry Potter waving your wand and seeing something happen appear before you, but everything is coming from a magical source. Whatever that energy is, you can call it God, you can call it the universe, whatever it is, I think there's something out there. I'm not necessarily convinced that there's an old man with a beard who's like playing his like chess, you know, using his like chess pieces mm-hmm. on the board. But I think that there's a creative force out there. And for me, to tie into about the characters, I've come to think of that creative force as sort of being like the author of our story. And the relationship I have with that author is the one I try to cultivate with my own characters, where we play together, we create together. I can't create the story without them, and they can't exist without me because I'm their source. But through me, they take on a life of their own. So I don't know if that makes sense, but that's kind of my, you know, mystical philosophy in a nutshell.
So, trying to recap that. So in essence, there's an energy, there is something more to the world that we know, but what that is can't really be defined, but you know it has an influence on what we do and how that brought to life is influenced through your characters.
Yes. Good job.
Yes. So I think that's fascinating to me. So as a result of that, how much how much influence do you feel? So if we have this mystical energy that's outside of our own bubble, that is trying to educate our bubble into what is possible or what is out there past our bubble, how much influence do you think it has on your writings?
Well, I try to keep myself open to that energy. I would say that it has a lot of influence. I think that sometimes a lot of writers, I think, will tell you that you feel like an energy is passing through you in your creating. Some people disagree with that. For me, it kind of is the case where I feel like as if I'm somehow mirroring in my writing with my characters, my own experience with my creator. So I try to open myself up to that energy, that creative energy that creates everything I experience, and use it to funnel into the stories I tell.
So do you feel that this is actually an energy, or would you, so for example, if I said, well, I think that's spirit, so if I had that view and I believed in spirit, I might say that's a spirit guide, or that is, that's a relative or somebody that should have influence trying to influence others through you. What would your view on that be?
Well, I think that spirit and energy are often sort of the same kind of word for the same idea, but I don't know if I'm not sure if there's such a definite personality behind that. In my view, there may be, there may not be that, you know, I honestly don't know. For me, it is the mystery. Part of what I enjoy doing is like the Iyer Smith song, I Let the Mystery Be. I find that, you know, I like opening myself up, but I don't feel the need to try to put a face on what I'm dealing with. So, possibly, I mean, it could be ancestors helping. It could be, you know, spirit guiding force. But for me, that doesn't matter as much as just the sense of connection that I have to it.
I fully understand that. As somebody who has practiced mediumship over the years, one of the things that for me has been really important development is that recognition that sometimes I will know information, but I have no absolute guarantee where that's coming from. There is nothing that in concrete I can say this is definitively where it's from. I just know this information, and I think it's related to somebody, but that doesn't mean to say that is directly where it's coming from, because I don't have the evidence.
It could be, though. I mean, it could be that there's someone, you know, but it's just I think that quite often it's easier for us to put a face on an energy that is not necessarily comprehensible. And that's sort of how we get a handle on it.
Absolutely. When I know where that's from, then I would absolutely say it. Other times, I don't know. You know, yeah. And it's a balance. So they're kind of thinking around that energy and how we may not always describe it as a spirit. I like that that view. So with this interest, because you've got a very broad mind, you've been very open to anything else that might be, so very questioning mind, where did that come from? When did you start to think, actually, this isn't all it is, there's more to this?
Well, you know, I think it came in a response to a very fundamentalist upbringing. It's odd because in my family there's always been sort of a mystical bit, but that's very much.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And colored by the old man in the sky with the beard and the devil coming to get you kind of thing. So I think that as I moved away from that very concrete view of what God is and what the world is and what our purpose on, on earth is, I think I somehow kept the sense of the mystical, but I let go of the judgmental part of that. So not that there, I do believe there's a right and a wrong in some level, you know, don't like, you know, Ten Commandments, don't go killing people, that kind of thing, that I support. But I think that a lot of the religious laws that people place on people are just total, you know, ridiculous nonsense. I think that we have, you know, we have a right to live our lives as long as you're not hurting, you know, like the old saying, and you're harmed, you're not, do what you will. That's kind of, you know, I kind of sort of adopted the Wiccan creed on some level.
I think it's as soon as we start defining something, that's when we become in battle with other people who define it differently. And actually, it's the set of values we live by that that are the important things, you know, that don't hurt other people. Yeah. And the influences that are out there, what is out there, it doesn't really matter. We just know there is an influence and we can use that positively or not.
Absolutely.
So
and that's a great time to be using it positively.
Absolutely. And it's one of those things that people will always strive to understand because we have that absolute need as part of the human race. We have to understand everything to the nth degree. And people don't like to accept there'll be things that they don't understand and it's okay. That doesn't mean to say it doesn't exist or it isn't there. So in terms of your, I mean, clearly brought up in with a religious overview, maybe a Christian belief, I'm not sure, but brought up in that religious, with that religious set of rules that you realised don't need to be there. We don't need to be dictated. We don't have to have an image of what is out there. We can live by a set of values. When did you start to think about the occult? Because that's, I know you get that with the whole devil thing as you grow up, you know, there's this God and there's the devil. But in terms of the occult, that's slightly different again.
Oh, gosh, you know, I think like so many other nerds that my first kind of experience of the occult was Dark Shadows when I was a very little boy. I was forbidden to watch it. So, of course, I would sneak in and watch it every chance I could. And
of course.
The Night Stalker after that. So I think that probably television and books, I mean, I started reading ghost stories and things like Stephen King books when I was very, very, you know, they made it beneath my mother's radar. And so I've always had an interest. So I think part of the interest too was just that you know, the sense of power that was conveyed in the occult, and whether or not that is a concrete force that you can access in this world, you got to admit, like, especially in Dark Shadows, the witch was really the best character because she made everything happen, you know? So I think I have a natural bent because, like I said, I sort of come from a long line of mystical people, whatever, but television, books, comic books, for heaven's sake, yeah, it was through fantasy that I started developing my interest in the occult at first. Of course, later on, I went through and I've read so many kind of nonfiction books, partially for research, partially because I just enjoy reading about magic and about the occult.
Have you met and spent time with witches?
Well, yes, I have. I certainly have. Not in a formal way. It's like visiting with a coven or doing any kind of rites or anything, but yeah, I've met several witches through the time, and I feel very good when quite often I will get emails from witch practitioners who will congratulate me on getting some sort of point they see as being well expressed in my books, and I'm using something that resonates with them in my fiction. So yeah, I know. I hate to say this, but some of my best friends are witches. I know that sounds kind of goofy, but yes, I do know some witches.
So the next question then I'm going to ask is, some people would think if you're dabbling with or you're researching or you're mixing with individuals who are part of the occult in whatever fashion, that they find they become more superstitious. They start worrying about the impact of that or what they write. Do you worry about anything like that? I'm not suggesting you should. It's just a question that people might ask.
Well, okay, so... You know, I think that part of what I found interesting, I've done a bit of, with the house industry dealing with true crime about serial killers. I honestly believe that, because I've read a lot of Anne Rule books, and I noticed that there's a darker energy that I feel tapping me on the shoulder when I read that kind of book than when I read about the occult. So I think that, sure, possibly. I mean, you obviously watch where you're stepping, but I don't really believe that if you are grounded, especially grounded in this physical world, that there's any true danger. I don't think that there's any kind of, you know, dark tome, any kind of, that's out to grab your soul or something, as much as Lovecraft may have popularized the idea.
Oh, and, you know, speaking of Rule, we have Leslie Rule.
Oh, I know. I love her ghost book, too. She wrote a book, a ghost book that sort of tied in with her mother's investigations at one point. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a really interesting lady. So where do you plan on going next? Like, after these series, are you going to continue in this type of writing, or are you going to do something?
Well, that is a very good question. I actually have been attempting with a few different stories. One would have been a mystery series. I say would have been because I've set it aside for now. I was not able to, even though there were some really good characters who've been very patient with me and waiting to play, I couldn't quite get the story together. So I've set it aside, and I, long story short, I had been, long before I was published, I tried to get published, so I'm sort of an overnight success that was 20 years in the making. And when I was 27, I started a novel that I set aside, and during a recent-ish move, I found those pages. And I read them and decided there was still some life in that story. So I have been playing with that recently to see if I could do for like a collaboration with 27-year-old me and see what kind of story we could tell together. So I've been working on that for a while. That, too, has been not coming easily. So I'm focusing on that. I'm also attempting to do a screenplay because, hey, I live in Southern California, so I think it's law you have to do a screenplay at some point. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to open myself up to that creative energy of the universe because right now I'm not feeling it come through very strongly. So that's the best answer I can give is that I'm trying a lot of different things, but I'm not sure what's going to stick at this point.
Now, when someone buys your book, any one of your books, and they go home and they read it, what is it that you want them to take away from it? Like, what is it that you're trying to give to the reader?
I try to write a story on many different levels. First, there is an entertainment value. I love a good just yarn that has a lot of plot twist and a lot of surprises. I love that. I love writing that. But I also try to say something about human relationships and trust and where we fit in the world, what we owe society, what society owes us, how, you know, how it all kind of meshes together in my mind. And then, especially with the New Orleans series, with the Savannah series, I was writing about the occult. I was writing books, you know, with the occult in. But with the New Orleans series, I set out to write books that were not only about the occult, but would be occult books in and of themselves. So the final book of the New Orleans series, if you read between the lines, you will see there is a lot of occult teachings built in. So I've toyed with the idea of doing like a grimoire based on the New Orleans series, basically, because it's with the whole series, it addresses many aspects of I've never really been into ceremonial magic, but of the mythology behind magic. So it's I hope that depending on where the reader comes for it, what the reader comes for, they find in the story. As I said, I do have some readers who are witches and who are occult practitioners, and it always feels good to me when they get back in touch with me and say, hey, good job, you know. But I also love it when people just say, oh, you know, that story was so much fun. I had so much fun seeing how this character went through his or her path. So I'm trying to reach readers on several levels. May not be doing that, but I'm trying.
That's all you can do. How do you feel about that with the, you know, our modern world, and people can get in touch with you and they can leave you know, nasty statements as well as good. Like, the interaction is a lot more available. So how does that affect you as a writer? Do you follow the reviews?
Or? You know, I don't read reviews that are not. I read professional reviews, so like Publishers Weekly. If it's written by, you know, if it's in a newspaper or if it's in a magazine, I will read it then. But the problem with reader-based reviews is that they either make your head too big or they make you feel like garbage. So basically, I've heard friends say, like, you can kind of trust the 3-star reviews, because that's probably the clearest focus of what you're doing. The 5-star reviews, yeah, you've got a fan and they love you and that's great. The 1-stars, the book was just not for them, you know? But yeah, people can eviscerate you. I have had some experiences where people I got an email from somebody in Greece wanting to let me know how horrible of a writer I was. I'm like, really? You're on the other side of the planet. You have, you know, you must have something better to do with your life. You're taking the time. But for anybody who, you know, you get one email from a negative email, and then you get 100 good emails. And, you know, I'm afraid I'm one of these people that I might tend to focus more on that negative email. But if you do get an email where somebody appreciate what you're doing, if they understand what you're doing, if they just like the story, that really does help cover for the ones that don't. But, you know, most of the time, sometimes people will write me and be like, I don't like this about your book. And I'm like, you know what? I agree. I wish I could have found a better way to do that too. But, you know, it's so much is based on taste. So much is based on people's expectations when they read a book. And part of what I would say about the creative energy of a book is that, yes, you write one book, but the reader reads a different book because they're bringing so much of themselves to it. And quite often you'll have people ask you a question about something that, you know, why you did something in a book that you didn't do. This is actually something they brought to it themselves. And so it's a partnership, and I wish that readers would appreciate that quite often, you know, their experience is half theirs, you know, and that's, yeah, sometimes books are really bad, sometimes books don't grab you, but it's also a lot of what you're expecting and what you're hoping for in that book. And what may not work for you is working really well for someone else.
What kind of atmosphere do you need to write your books? Like, where do you do that? Where do you do that? Is it be in a country, or is it in your home, or do you go away? Or, and where do you write?
My world is in my head. I don't need any particular setting. I've written in a major city. I've written in the middle of nowhere, and I've written in a small city. Right now, I'm in Palm Springs, California, which is like the biggest small city in the world. But yeah, it doesn't really affect me. I find that once I move into that space where I'm living in the world that I'm writing, what is on the outside doesn't really matter, unless it's, you know, obviously if there's like major construction going on right next door, that might give me some issues. But just the atmosphere in general, it doesn't really matter to me.
Wow. Do you have a website, or do you have a place that you'd like people to go if they want to find out more about you?
I do. If you just go to jdhornauthor.com, it will tell you far more than you ever wanted to know about me.
Fantastic. Great. Now, we're going to have that up on our website as well, and some of your books, so any of our listeners can go there with just one click.
Very cool.
Again, our guest has been the author J.D. Horn. Thank you for taking the time to come on the show.
Thanks. It was fun.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end! By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll tell you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.